This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Geer. Today we're speaking with Scott Smith. Scott, how are you involved with digital asset management?
Oh, hello, Henrik. I'm just returning to this space after a hiatus. I'm just going to talk a little bit about my background, and then I'll follow up with my plans going forward and current status. I worked several years in publishing and advertising, where I spent a lot of time creating, losing, and then recreating content, familiar pain points, of course. In the mid-1990s, my employer bought a copy of Aldous Fetch, which is an ancestor of Extensis Portfolio. And it's hard to communicate how much of a how groundbreaking that was at the time, that I could actually see what photos and illustrations looked like without having to spend 2 minutes opening Photoshop on the computers of the day and be able to do keyword searches were huge. It was like magic. And later I got into web content management at the time. And I realized that there was like a left-hand, right-hand problem with DAM and other flavors of content platforms. They were often in most organizations thought of as being very separate rather than complementary endeavors. And I totally thought they should know each other. I thought that was like the best use of these things for business, if there was some sort of level of integration. I became interested in these types of things, of integrating DAM and other types of content platforms. And nowadays, I'm interested in what I call whole content solutions, with an approach that focuses on content, its consumers, rather than fixating on formats, platforms, acronyms, etc. Particular interest of mine is the opportunity to integrate structured authoring systems where text is managed as reusable modules rather than finished Word or HTML files. Somewhat common in the technical documentation world that's starting to make inroads into marketing and other types of communication. My thinking is that software vendors of all sorts of different lineages build their content platforms as a single source of truth, and they're in most cases not being especially truthful. No single platform is going to be able to store, manage, and deliver all content types. At least they're not going to do it very well. The ultimate truth is that your solution is going to likely involve multiple integrated platforms, probably from an array of vendors. So the single source, the truth is you may have multiple single sources of truth. The past few years, I've started to see partnerships with DAM and component content management systems. These are the structured authoring tools, and DAM and product information system, which offer some level of structured content capabilities. And I think these are very positive developments in the marketing content world. And I recognize that these types of sophisticated solutions aren't going to be a fit for every organization, certainly not for small ones and even some large ones. If your company makes a lot of original content, just tons of it, and it's very high level of design, you're probably not going to be really geared towards doing like a structured content DAM mashup sort of endeavor. But if your reusable content is your goal and it's practical within your context, you should pursue those options vigorously. And that's where I fit in, trying to help people with that.
Scott, how does preserving brand security and preventing digital liability mean when it comes to digital asset management?
I'm going to start with digital liability, explain that a little bit, and I'll segue into the brand security portion. Digital liability is a term I started using sometime in 2009. I think it started with a LinkedIn discussion. Where I was at the time, I was really frustrated that there seemed like there was entirely too much energy spent pondering, even bickering about whether certain platforms were web content management or digital asset management or enterprise content management or learning content management, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that that wasn't very helpful to both the integrators, the consultants, or the clients who were trying to buy these sorts of things. It really comes down to what problems are you trying to solve. And I felt that the platforms, all the ones I mentioned above, there's all sorts of acronyms now, that they had different lineages and different specialization and might have been born in different eras. I mean, we have some that are cloud native types of solutions, still some on-premise out there, but they are all managing content. And so my philosophy is that things that we call digital assets, they're all content. However, not all digital content can be considered a digital asset. Content should provide contextual value that could be, you know, contextual within an organization or with a, you know, a client, vendor, ecosystem, et cetera. But the contextual value is what makes a digital asset. If a morsel of content does not offer value in, you know, certain contexts, it's a digital liability. Few examples of digital liability. I could go on for days on this, but content that's improperly described by metadata, we can't find content, or I can't find content, is a very large problem still, you know, after, you know, 25 years or so. The organizational technologies or processes don't provide adequate reuse or repurposing opportunities for content. So you might end up with searching for your corporate logo, you might get 60 hits, which is not very helpful because, I mean, there's bound to be some that have drifted from the original intended value or look and feel of that. And so that's a problem. So that becomes a liability. Inconsistent modifications among language derivatives of, you know, content, whether that's logo taglines or whether that's, you know, like a finished, you know, about us document or something like that. Those are digital liabilities. So in short, if your digital content can't be found, used, transformed, shared, or understood, then it's a digital liability. Now, brand security, you know, kind of builds on that. But let me tell you about the origin of that term that as I use it. In 2018, I was on a call with a mentor who is a you know, very well-known pioneer in the content strategy for technical communication. And he was describing some of his work for government agencies and high-tech manufacturing. And he told of being recruited for projects where the organizations were pursuing a single source content strategy for one primary reason, and that was to prevent security risk. And some of the clients he was talking about were actually talking about national security type risk. Of course, I don't know anything other than they were preventing risk. So my background and clients are rather different than his. And I've worked with a lot of, you know, consumer packaged goods retailers and schools and universities. So I realized that the types of content that I work with and the type that's managed, it's not usually of the high stakes variety of what he was describing where his for his work. However, we had almost the identical goals that we were striving for. We were both trying to prevent inconsistent, confusing content that arises from content siloing and content duplication and then transmitting things via email attachments, et cetera. And I recognized that, you know, a lot of the work that I had been doing, it's what I now call brand security, and you're protecting the brand. So the process of ensuring that the brand building elements, the sounds, the images, the video and copy should be developed from a single source strategy. And your content appears in multiple channels. So any inconsistency in image colors or logo taglines or value propositions, product features, you could go on. I mean, these things, these inconsistencies can damage your brand. And there can be a cost to that. Sometimes it's just mildly embarrassing if you have like something is expressed one way in one part of your site, and then content that was intended to be the same is expressed a little differently. That's not a big deal, but there are cases where, you know, things are confusing enough that customers will go elsewhere, because we can find competitors very quickly with a Google search now. So it can result in loss of business. And in some cases, there can even be some, these inconsistencies can lead to lawsuits. And those can potentially be very costly. My thinking is that variations of files, any content, should be intentional. The content ecosystem, which, like I said earlier, will involve multiple platforms, should have an awareness of all the content derivatives. And as usual, metadata is going to be your friend here. some signs that your organization may be on its way to a brand security problem. And these are going to be very familiar. If your staff habitually makes copies of files to place in multiple content repositories, or copies text from a document to paste in other documents or on other web pages, if you share latest and greatest logo product shot as attachment to email, Slack messages, etc., if you have same or similar content locked in multiple formats, like you have some in Word documents, some in HTML, that's going to cause problems. These are all risk, because it's easy. It's really easy, too easy to make content clones. It's not easy to find the clones, to update them if a change is needed, if there's a mistake, or if your branding message has changed. If you were to copy a file into four different content repositories, or you pasted an excerpt about our company text into six different documents, you have to ask, are you going to be able to find all copies in 18 months or even next week if you need to make a change? And then what you have is that over time, in a few content update cycles, your clones are going to stop being identical twins. Eventually, some are going to get updated and some aren't, and some are going to get updated incorrectly. And eventually, they're going to become like distant cousins, and eventually, they're going to become complete strangers. And that's going to cause a lot of problems downstream as people pick up and reuse the wrong, incorrect content.
Great points. And I've seen that happen before with rebrandings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is a horrific example of how that badly could go. Scott, what advice would you like to share with DAM professionals and people aspiring to become DAM professionals?
One of the things that I think is important in this space, or any space that people are going to enter, or any professional context, is that when you're new to it, a lot of people like me and people that aren't quite like me are going to feel the pangs of imposter syndrome, which is not a bad thing necessarily. If you've been at it for a while, in some cases even a short while, you may be tempted by the siren's call of expert syndrome. But everybody has imposter syndrome. And as I said, it can be an asset because it helps you prepare. What you don't want, you want to guard against, is expert syndrome, because that's a liability. That's a, you know, as you know, Dunning and Kruger had said that that's a phenomenon where people, you know, can overestimate their ability to perform a task, which there's a little bit difference between confidence and arrogance. And I look at it as that you have like one end, you have like the Benjamin Spock advice for raising children, where he said, trust yourself, you know more than you think you do. And if even if you've never worked on a DAM project or attended a DAM conference, you know a bit about DAM because you organize things on your computer, your phone, your laptop, you have photo libraries, you might even be diligently maintaining the metadata on your files. I don't do that enough. But you know, as far as like expert syndrome, I think about the advice from astronaut Scott Kelly, who set the record for he spent over a year on the International Space Station. And he had a comment on an interview I saw where he said, not everything up here, which he's referring to the space station, is rocket science. But when it is, find a rocket scientist. And I think that, you know, that's portable to all other contexts. When you need expertise, find an expert. Don't just say, I got this, and you know, you put yourself in a bad position. I've done that before. I took down a client's production system, and I found out we didn't have backup of the file system. That was a bad scene. And I also, not on a DAM project, but a SharePoint portal, I took down it was a development project. It was still a development server, dummy content and things like that. But I took it down accidentally because I thought I could do something that it wouldn't let me do. And it was very hard to get back. I had to rebuild it. And that was not a good first day on a project. But, just like it's important to realize, you don't, nor will you ever know everything about anything. But, you know, for other advice, ensure that whether you're starting a project or existing, ensure that all the DAM pieces of your DAM system are backed up. I spoke to the couple of instances where I didn't have a backup system. I was I made mistakes I shouldn't have had, but mistakes are going to happen even when people are, you know, working with the best of intent. So there should never be situations where something, the file system of the database can't be recalled. Rebuilding is a pain, total pain. I'd say provide a safe environment which people can learn about all aspects of the platform if they want to. That's, a snapshot on a development server, a sandbox on a laptop. If people want to just bang on the usability to their heart's content without affecting coworkers or customers, that's a really nice thing to have. If people want to practice development, JavaScript, or database management, those are very handy for that too. Other advice: beware of the hype. There's a lot of hype out in the world. Some of the things that I see the hype a lot are artificial intelligence features in DAM systems. A lot of things are very interesting and have potential, but you also have the memes that have been made out of artificial intelligent system recognition or image recognition. So one of them is that I think it might not have been a DAM system. It might have been a Google tool, but it couldn't really tell the difference between golden doodle puppies and fried chicken. I mean, they're bumpy and golden and just like, very similar one with chihuahuas and blueberry muffins. Consider the hype with a grain of salt. Things are probably not going to hold up when you hear from the sales and marketing teams of a client when you actually start doing the sandbox bake-offs. Thanks for aspiring DAM professionals. Like I was touching on, there's a lot of prudential roles. It's not just taxonomy. It's not just development. I'd say go big in the areas where you're interested. That might be a library science master's if you're very interested in, the taxonomy and metadata aspect of it. You can get DAM degrees now. There's several certificate programs. There's also a couple of colleges where you can actually get a degree. Things that are important for training, instructional design, tech writing, project management is always welcome. Implementations. And as I mentioned earlier, data administration, systems administration, again, provide the safe area where people can grow those sorts of skills. I would also advise something that I'm not as good about doing, practicing what I preach, is that I think that people should take some time to learn about what you may not be interested in, so you have a little better understanding of the challenges that your peers or clients may be having. It's very easy to tell for a database administrator to tell a taxonomist, why don't you just do this? Well, the taxonomist can tell the database administrator, why don't you just do this? And a lot of times there's no just, that's not really a part of the cause. Things are a little bit more difficult. But I think it helps with the empathy and understanding of the job expectations of people. Conferences are very helpful. Many are online now. There's still a lot of quality learning out there. I can't stress the value of networking. I wrote here in my notes, network, network, network. And I think LinkedIn is one of the most valuable tools that I've had. I mean, I've built up a DAM network over the years, and I absolutely savor the free learning I get from the experts and the posts and the articles and the videos and learning about webinars and things like that. Talk to as many people as you can. Make the universe smaller. Some of the advice I'd have for beginners and seasoned veterans.
Well, thanks, Scott.
Okay, thank you.
For more on this, visit anotherdampodcast.com. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to send me an email at anotherdamblog@gmail.com. Thanks again.